Damn it, Nick.
I love being on here with you guys, Nick and Joe. I really appreciate it.
Literally too long didn't read.
TLDR, you guys are awesome.
So, Nicholas, flip that hat around for a second.
Oh, God.
Flip it around. Okay. That's a regular, standard new era cap, correct?
It's a game hat, yeah.
Yeah. You look stupid.
Yeah.
You got to get the low rise on the hat. See, this kind of fits my head. This is also a new era hat, but the front of it doesn't stick straight up and then come straight back. You got to get that low rise. It fits the curvature of your head better. You'd look smooth as shit if that hat just fit the dome of your head better.
Well, yeah, I'm confused because like I have that. You've seen my Braves hat, right? That I own?
No.
Okay, because I've had that one for like a long time, like, and that fits me perfectly. So
I feel like they
always wear down. But you know, that may be what it is. They may change.
You know, because like I got a couple because every year, right, I get a new baseball cap, right, and so I always try and get. Once I discovered the low rise, like on the on the dome piece there, they fit so much better. But every now and then, like I get a Cardinals hat last year, wasn't available, so I got the standard, and it just doesn't sit right like on your head because it's like super stiff. So unless you like break it in, which is not easy to do with these hats anymore, they're too stiff. But anyways, one other thing, Nicholas.
Oh,
I don't know if you've caught the newest, the latest episode of Bluey.
I have not. No.
Fucking gut punching.
Oh boy.
Absolutely gut punching, Nicholas. I watched this and I was in goddamn tears. Megan and I are fucking sobbing on the goddamn couch. And Violet's like, why? Like looking at us, like, why are you fucking lunatics crying? And it was something else, Nicholas. I advise you and Lauren have children quickly so you can watch it without like being a weirdo, so that we can have discussions about Bluey because it's very important.
You trying to get a Bluey podcast going for the DSG?
I think so. I think we need it. I think that. And with that said, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, listeners of all ages, the Dork Shared Gooniverse and Geeks Worldwide Radio. I've listened back to the podcast and I've realized I don't enunciate so well, so I'm really trying to enunciate.
Good on you for listening to yourself. Holy crap.
The greatest podcasting team in the world. He's the comic book writer, Nick Farrar. I'm your friendly neighborhood backcracker, Dr. Joe. And together we are the TLDR Comic Book Club, baby. How's it going, Nicholas?
I am doing just splendid, Joe. We got a lot to get to today. We got some news that we got to touch upon as well, some jaw-dropping news. But before we get to that, though, I just want to remind the people that if you're new to the show, if you're just catching us on Twitter, on YouTube, on our Instagram page, Instagram Live, make sure you subscribe to one of our audio channels. As much as we enjoy you guys watching us live here on our audio channels, that's the only place you can find our Friarside Chats. We have one coming up next week that's actually going to be paired with our What's New with the editor of Coiled to Strike, which is a Kickstarter campaign that you guys can go check out now. You'll hear more of that conversation next week. But also, you also hear from so we got some new creators, up and coming creators, but we also have some established creators, plenty of them, right? Of Tony Fleece, Sean Lewis, among others, Trip Zdarsky, who we may be seeing at C2E2 soon. And then a one we haven't had on in a while, Scott Snyder, who is the news this week is centered around him, Joe. So we got Bleeding Cool is reporting that it looks like Scott is going to be heading this new DC initiative. And I believe it was Absolute DC, if I'm not mistaken, it's akin to the Ultimate Marvel Universe. And people have been wondering what Scott's next step is going to be with superhero comics. Obviously, he's been doing his own thing independently. He has his class that he does as well, which I am a part of. And then we also have, he's also doing Witches, which there's been a lot going on there for that animated show. Excited to see that over on Amazon. But seeing him get to do, head this new DC initiative and then having other creators come in, and it's kind of like the way it sounds is like not DC Black Label in the sense of the like adult edgy darkness, but it's also DC Black Label in the sense of like, you can kind of do what you want to do with the characters from DC here and not worry about canon.
Well, that's what I love about Marvel's Ultimate Universe. And I've been talking about the newest, Ultimate Spider-Man, but we see it with Black Panther and X-Men and things like that. So I love that because, you know, with Black Label, you know, what we love about that is it's darker, it's edgier, it's gritty, right? With the Ultimate series, it's allows you to sort of take those characters, go off canon, but it's more, I think, just user friendly in that sense, right? Like I want to say all ages, but I'm not saying that as it's like, oh, it's like just for kids or things like that, right? It's more accessible to more people,
right?
And I think that's exactly what this is going to be, right? It's going to be fresh takes, fresh ideas on characters that we have 1,000 books for, where things can kind of get a little stale, but allows new creators and maybe even well-known creators to kind of jump in and play in the sandbox with these characters. And because we know that there's stringent rules, right, with Batman and Superman and even Chip said, like, with Daredevil, he was allowed a great deal of freedom. But like with Spider-Man, it was like, keep it within these parameters, Chip, you know. So I think that'll be a lot of fun. But I have a lot of questions, right?
We,
DC right now seems like they're throwing a ton of shit against the wall and trying to see what sticks because they've got Black Label. We know there's something else big going on, right?
Yep.
Over there.
Yep.
And now we have this. And so like, okay, is this just like a one for one? Marvel's doing this. They're having success with it. We're going to piggyback off that and do it. And why not give the reins to someone like Scott? Like, it's the perfect person to do it. Mm-hmm. Now, is this going to be Scott just sort of overseeing it all, right? And you know, like, will, like, how involved will he be in writing individual stories? Because we know he's got a big thing, you know, over with Distillery now. He's a big part of that. Yep. The Dark Spaces, imprint with IDW, right? He helps oversee. He still has his, his Substack stuff that he, right. So like, again, is it going to be like, okay, here you go, Scott, you are sort of the overseer of all of this. And, you know, maybe he writes a small series here, or he's just going to be a curator, right? Like, okay, these are the people who I want writing and drawing these stories. Right. Mm. And it's like, more of an editorial kind of, you know, aspect.
So I would imagine. I'm curious. Is that what you think it's going to be? Because my guess is he's going to end up. He's writing one or two titles, and it's going to be like one that's immensely important, like maybe a Batman or something, like something else that's like a big needle mover, and then maybe something that's like kind of like for him, like one for them and one for him. That's what
my imagination is probably like a 60-40 situation, like 60-40. I'm going to, you know, kind of sort of be in charge of what's going on. And then like, yeah, he's going to get a title, maybe two. And I imagine they'd probably be limited. Although I don't know. Did it mention anything about ongoing stuff? I think it's probably going to be more like probably knowing Scott, because he's got so many fingers and so many pies. It'll probably be like six story.
Yeah, I would, you know what I mean? for him, it'll probably be six, but then I would imagine, Joe, it's going to be write it as six. And then if it kicks ass, then we'll continue on with it. And then we'll find a way to make it. Like, that's how it always is with comics, is you write that one arc. And then if it kills it, you know, hopefully you leave room to go back to it. And then you go from there, especially with the big two right now. That's very much the formula these days. But very exciting news. Very excited to see what this is, what this takes shape, because, you know, we're just speculating right now with the news that broke. But again, you know, as we mentioned, we've talked to Scott multiple times on the show, among other creators. Go subscribe to one of our audio channels. We're talking Apple, Spotify, Geeks Worldwide Radio, Pocket Cast, Amazon, you name it, we're on there. And then while you're there, subscribe, leave a 5-star rating and review, or the highest rating and review you can leave. Otherwise, you're going to learn the real meaning of Batcracka. And I can promise you that you're not going to want to learn what that means for real. But anyways, Joe, we got a mainline episode. And maybe one of us may not
We're fucking cooking with gas, baby.
Yes, yes, we are. We are closing in on TLDR 100. And again, for those new to the show, that does not mean that we've only done 100 episodes. We've just 100 mainline episodes. We will complain until we're blue in the face about events, but we do a ton of event-like things that pull us away from our mainline. But none of that today, Joe. But first, before we get to any of that, we got to do a little catching up. I actually didn't do a whole hell of a lot in the way of catching up recently, but I know you got to work.
Yeah. I didn't have to, I didn't have work on Monday. That's how I should put it. So I had some time to read, baby. And so I was able to, you know, again, catch up on a lot of stuff, mostly stuff that had been, you know, piling up over the last week or two, but, Transformers issue 7. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Thundercats.
Oh,
baby. Issue 3. Excellent. Caught up on Darth Vader issue 44, 45. Thank God the dark droid stuff is over. The Agent issues 3 and 4. So this is a book that you read and you're like, eh, I'm out. And all I you. Said, yep. And I said, I like where it's going. We'll see. First two issues. I would say I've now read all caught up on the first four issues. It's fine. It's okay. Fine. I was like, borderline gonna give up on it after the third and not even read the fourth one, but I said I'll get through. So it's like it's fine. It's a good story. It's not one I would be like, oh yeah, you gotta go read this book. It's fine. You come across it, you might like it. I find it it's dialogue heavy.
Gotcha.
And it can get a little confusing at times, so just the way I think, but anyways. But so it's not pacing, it's not bad.
The flow is a little off.
Yeah, a little off. It loses me at times. Okay. And Dark Spaces Dungeon issue 5. If you've seen the tweets and the Instagrams and the whatnot, you know that's the book that I'm talking about this week. Issue 5 dropped last week, folks. That's how fucking good this book is, and I can't wait to discuss it. And then speaking of another great, excellent book that I can't wait to discuss, that's Beneath the Trees Where Nobody Sees issue 5. I thought this was the last issue. No, 6 issues.
Wait more.
Yeah, you do, Nicholas.
I'm dying to, like, I'm very excited to read Dark Spaces Dungeon, but I'm dying to read Beneath the Trees Where Nobody Sees. IDW on a quiet heater right now.
On a fucking real solid heater. Nicholas, this book, like issue after issue after issue, just continues to absolutely astonish. Just like it's like everything you want. Like I sound like a goddamn broken record, but like when you get engrossed in one of these types of stories, these suspense, sort of murder, serial killer stories, shows, movies, whatever, you just like, it's got your full attention and you can't let go. And you're always asked afterwards going, what the shit did I just see, read, whatever. And that's what this story is. But what's mind-bending about it is that we're in this world where the main characters are animals. And how this story, I mean, you don't want to talk about pacing. This book is perfectly paced, right? Just like it, every issue, it ends, you go, oh man. And then you get into it. And so what we get in this particular issue is our main character is sort of on the run, and we get to see them now. Like in the first issue, you see them do what they're really fucking good at. That's what blows your mind. Cause you're like, what the shit did I just see? And then there's this sort of like, I don't want to get into it too much cause I want to describe it on the show,
right.
But where we get to now with the character being on the run and just how all the pieces have sort of been set in place. You just like, you're enthralled. And the way that it ends, it's like, oh shit. Oh shit. Like I can't gush about this book enough. And it is excellent. And it is just storytelling just done at its finest. Cause again, you're dealing with animals, right? Mm-hmm. Talking animals, but it is so twisted and fucked up. That I can't like put it down. This is a book that if you haven't been reading and you eventually grab the graphic novel and you go to read it, you will read it in one sitting and you will read it in no time flat. That's how good it is.
God, This is another one that I have serious FOMO about. Like, I'm like, and what kills me too about this one is, it's similar to Local Man for me, where that one snuck by me, and I was just like, okay, I didn't really know like what was going on. I just hadn't been on my radar. And then you called dibs and loved it. I'm like, fuck, this one snuck by me. It's the same thing here with Beneath the Trees Where Nobody Sees. It's just like, it's not like one of those other books where it's like, oh, we both knew we would have wanted this. We just missed out on like one of us saw it sooner and called dibs. This got Beneath the Trees Where Nobody Sees snuck by me. And now I'm just like, oh, God, now I got to wait months for this.
I almost missed it. And if it wasn't for like people gushing about it on Twitter and then the art, like kind of captivating me, I don't know if I had picked it up.
And who says right? Social media is bad?
Right? Like, this was 100% something that I saw buzz about on Twitter. And I saw the first issue. I go, this looks okay. Okay. All right. And then I didn't know what to expect. And then boom.
Damn. Okay. Well, that's I didn't realize that. Awesome. I can't wait to hear you talk about it in full detail. If nothing else, that way you can let me finally fucking read Beneath the Trees Where Nobody Sees. Moving on from catching up, we got a lot to get to in what's new before we get to the two books that you and I want to break down in full detail. Let's get to Marvel, Joe. You got a heavy lift here.
All right, yeah. Yeah, according to League of Comic Book Geeks, 83 titles. What the shit? From Marvel, we have Miles Morales Spider-Man, issue 19. Speaking of the Ultimate Verse, we have Ultimate Black Panther, issue 3. We have Chip's Avengers, Twilight, issue 5. This is so fucking good. Such a good series.
I'm excited to check that one out.
Yeah, the one book I didn't get to from Marvel this week that I wanted to read was Fall of the House of X, issue 4. We have The Spectacular Spider-Man, issue 2. Dead X-Men, issue 4. Spider-Boy, issue 6. Spider-Woman, issue 6. What If Venom, issue 3. Captain Marvel, issue 7. Mace Windu, issue 3. Black Widow and Hawkeye, issue 2. Beware the Planet of the Apes, issue 4. Roxanne Presents Thor, issue 1, Giant-Sized Hulk, issue 1, and then a book that we both read, that we both love, that we want to chat about real quick is Ghost Rider Final Vengeance, issue 2.
I want to chat about it. I want to fucking gush over this thing. This, honest to God, Joe, this might have been my favorite Ghost Rider thing that Benjamin Percy has given us to this point. It was so fucking cool. It and also great tone setter from Juan Ferreira, like with the cover. That is an all-time cover with the hood as the Spirit of Vengeance. Of course, like, that's not a spoiler anymore. We found out at the end of the first issue, but like, it's very much out there. And I'm just like, God, man, I was excited for this matchup, but I did not expect to be as amped as I am right now talking to you about it. Like, this is the tempo, like the narration, the breakdown of the character for people who aren't familiar with the character. Like, I love that. It's just everything about it. And Danny Kim crushed it with the art too. I mean, like, the motion was wild, and there are so many badass shots of the hood. So it's just, I mean, like, this was a perfect, like, this is a perfect issue of a comic book, period.
Well, I think you nailed it. You know, one of the aspects in that, like, We get the big reveal at the end of the first issue, and I think I told you, I'm not familiar with this guy. I really don't know him at all. I had to kind of look it up. And the way that Percy sort of gave you a very quick but very efficient sort of backstory to him, it was perfect, right? Mm-hmm. It wasn't like the entire issue wasn't bogged down with a retelling or an origin story. Which is good, because while I think having you know, some information about this character that I think most people aren't terribly familiar with was needed, but it didn't just take up an entire issue, right? Well, we see a lot of times with TV shows, we get that. It's like, oh, it's a filler kind of episode or a bridge, right? No, it was good. We get that quick, and you get a good sense of who the character is, which I thought was excellent. And then you get his narration, right? Which, again, we oftentimes will say, like, sometimes too much narration can really, again, slow down and bog down the story. And it didn't. It was great. Again, it was very efficient. And the other thing that I loved, outside of the art and outside of the action scenes, There was one scene in the diner with the waitress that I really loved. Yeah. But I thought Percy's descriptions of things was absolutely fucking bananas. It was there was a scene. There was a panel where he's trying to gain entrance to somewhere, and there's a vampire bouncer, and he's trying to like weasel his way in. This isn't a spoiler, but the way he describes it, he goes, "Well, I got something for you that might help, he's trying to bribe his way to get in." And he says, it's the blood of a newborn, real fresh. And I just went, "Oh God, that was extraordinarily descriptive and really fucking like, oh, he went there, right?" And yep. We know from Wolverine and from Ghost Rider in general, you know, Percy's gonna go there. He's not gonna hold back.
I mean,
and I went, "Oh." And then there were some other things where he just the way that he his wonderful ability to describe things and make you go, "Oh." It was absolutely perfect.
I'm stunned that, like, you know, we talk about Wolverine, like with the Wolverine Sabretooth War, there is a warning label on that, like legitimate. And I'm kind of stunned we don't have that for some of the Ghost Rider stuff. And especially in this issue, you're like reminding me of like some of the stuff I got. And I was like, oh God, like I'm reading this like on my way into work. I'm like, I gotta like make sure like no one can see like what's on some of these fucking pages. It is.
I read Sex Criminals. Okay. In the waiting room of a dance class. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no one said that was a smart move.
So. You're fine with Ghost Rider on the train, but
apparently, at least by your standards, I am at least. So there we go. But yeah, Ghost Rider, Final Vengeance, excuse me. Like, got to be getting in on this series. It's early enough where you still absolutely can. Awesome stuff in the second issue. Again, like, there was a really, we loved the first issue. The second one was 10 times better. Like, it was crazy. From DC, we got Batman, Superman, World's Finest, issue 26, Superman, issue 13, Titans, issue 10, Wonder Woman, issue 8, Catwoman, issue 64, Green Lantern, War Journal, issue 8, John Constantine, Hellblazer, Dead in America, issue 4, Batman, Offworld, issue 4, Jay Garrick, The Flash, issue 6, Mad, issue 37, and then, Joe, we got Nightwing, issue 113, which you wanted to talk about a little bit.
Yeah, I didn't realize this was Legacy, issue 300, right? So this is the 300th issue of Nightwing. So usually they always do something big for, you know, when a legacy 100, 200, whatever it might be. Right. So, but we also know that Nightwing, what is it? 115 is where we're getting the start of the final.
I think it's 14. Arc.
14. Right. So next one. Yeah. So, you knew this one was going to be big because the last issue was sort of a continuance of the story overall, but you could kind of read that as a one-off and enjoy it. And I thought it was very well done with Nightwing and Batwing. But this issue in particular, I don't know if you've read it yet, Nicholas, but it was a perfect jump start into the final arc. It sort of sets everything up because, right, you know, from when this started, you had Heartless and you had I always forget the big bad
the former mayor. I'll get that for you.
I know it always escapes my mind, but like that's how it started, and now we're sort of coming full circle, and Heartless has been sprinkled in throughout Taylor's entire run, and I think he has been used perfectly, because if you're going to end your run in this final arc with him as the big bad, I think it's brilliant that we haven't been oversaturated by him, because it gives you this sense of like he's been there slowly plotting, and I think makes him more formidable, for Dick and Nightwing and just everyone else, you know, that's involved. And, you know, we're seeing Nightwing right now, like he's, you know, this is not spoiler. He suddenly has this, this fear of heights, which is going to greatly, create some vulnerabilities for him. So I think this final arc is going to be absolutely nuts. And I can't wait for it. And this issue was a great jump start into that. It was a great sort of like, okay, like we're knocking the arrow. We're pulling the string back, and then it's about to be fired, and it's going to be absolutely fucking bananas.
That's awesome. And by the way, it's Blockbuster. that.
Yes, thank you.
Of. Yes. Yeah. Awesome stuff. Yeah. Nightwing. I mean, Tom Taylor is crushing it, and very excited to see it. We don't want to see his run end, but we're very excited to see how he's going to end it. We move over to Image. What do you got? We got an Image.
Well, yeah, but like this. So we've got Spawn 352, Something Epic issue 9, Moon Man issue 2, which you've been reading, Stam and Twitch Case Files issue 2, Hack Slash Back to School issue 4, The Weatherman issue 4, and this title just 7174 AD issue 1.
Before we get into the one we want to talk about, I do want to say on Moon Man issue 2, like the first issue, like the second issue as well. Especially the ending of this issue was really good cliffhanger. Definitely something that was like one of those things where it was like a mic drop, it's like more like a subtle bomb drop, like this just happened. Like, wait, what? And then boom, issue's done. Okay. Well, fuck me. All right. Guess I got to buy issue 3. But yes, I just wanted to circle up on Moon Man real quick. But yes, anyways.
Okay. So the last book from Image this week is a book that, fuck. we didn't want to end, but I think was ended at just the right spot. Right. So this is Kill Your Darlings, issue 8. Griffin Sheridan.
Parker and Bob Quinn.
Thank you. Jesus. Sorry, guys. It's another thing you guys can yell at me about. But like we've known this issue has been coming for a long time. And the first arc was so fucking badass. In the sense of just sort of building this world and introducing us to the characters. And then the second arc has been emotional gut punch after emotional gut punch and sort of leading us to where we are with this particular issue. And man, it was so good.
Uh-huh.
And this book came out like, I wish it had dropped in October and not September, because it dropped in September and it was like right in the middle of things, and it was too hard for us to really kind of give it a floppy, right? And it's a month too early, or a month too late, I should say, for us to consider it for the 2004 floppies. We're gonna have to find a way to give it an award somehow, Nicholas, because this book I think has been absolute perfection from start to finish, and it ended where it was supposed to end. And it ended the way it was supposed to end. And I love how it all came together, because I feel like getting to know Ethan and Griffin and Bob, right, and knowing their personalities and the way they tell and draw stories, I feel like this was the perfect, and it encapsulated, I think, what they wanted to. And the message they wanted to convey, and getting to know these characters and see them all start to finish, to me, I just thought was perfectly executed. And I wouldn't have wanted it any other way.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I really think what it comes down to with Kill Your Darling, the best way that I can put it is, this is the type of title, the type of story that you hand to somebody who's been reading, superhero comics, but wants to make that jump into indie, or someone who's like, that's all that comics are, superhero stuff. There's not like, what else is there in comics? Like, this is how you prove to people like comics is a medium, not a genre. This is one of those kinds of stories that you hand to them and say, check this shit out. Cause this ain't like, if you think that's all that comics are or superheroes, you ain't seen fucking nothing yet. And that's very much encapsulated in this last issue. Cause this was Bob Quinn. We've gushed over his art as much as anything throughout the entirety of this series. This was his best issue by far, not even close. He absolutely went, but like, he got to do everything in this issue. It was crazy how much is just like, part of me is wondering if that, like, I know they were waiting when last time we convened, I don't think they'd handed him the script for the eighth issue, if I'm not mistaken. The guys had not given it to Bob. But part of me was wondering, like, did they get on a call and be like, Bob's like, I want to do this, I want to draw that, I want to do this. And they're like, yep, you can do that and that and that. Because, like, he just fucking had everything. And it was all awesome. And all the action, man, I just had so much fun reading this. Big, loud, epic, action-packed ending. What more can you ask for?
Yeah, yeah, everything about it. Again, it was perfect. Yeah. Absolute perfection.
So good. And like, this is one that obviously I would have talked about on the show if we didn't have the guys on, because this was one that, can you believe how far this story has come to? Because, like, looking at where it started, the end of that first issue, and where things ended, it's just like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
It's crazy. What a wild ride.
Wild indeed.
Yep.
I'll rip through a few of these real quick. So from Skybound, we have Cobra Commander issue 4 and The Walking Dead Deluxe 87. And from AWA, You and I issue 3. You gotta fucking stop that. Just stop it.
I just want everybody to know I text Joe this too.
Yeah, it drives me bad shit when he. Because I look at it for a second, I go, oh, motherfucker. But
I'm just getting ready. I'm not a dad yet, but I'm just trying to. You got to coach me up.
Are you drinking a Red Stripe beer, by the way?
No, I'm drinking kombucha.
Oh,
I don't even know what Red Stripe beer is.
Oh, end the fucking podcast now. I can't.
I knew you were going to have a problem with that.
Drinks kombucha.
I knew you were going to have a problem with that.
Are you wearing patchouli as well? You fucking hippie.
I like it.
Oh, jeez. What's the like? It's the scar.
It's disgusting. What do you mean,
Nicholas?
Ginger, it's cayenne, it's very healthy.
I'm gonna have to go into the DSG group chat and tell them you like fucking kombucha, and we're gonna have to kick
that. Ask that, no, deliver it objectively. Ask them what they think. Ask them where they stand on it. Period. Don't tell them that I drink it. Ask them what they think and see what they say. Once you say that I'm the one that drinks it, they'll talk shit. But ask them.
I know what's going to happen, Nicholas. We're kicking you out of the goddamn group.
That's fine. Honestly, it'd be better for my sanity. Oh. But I part of me wonders if they're going to be like, what is that? Like, I've never had it. I don't have an opinion on it. Anyways, moving on. Makes me feel better.
No, hold on. You and I, don't fucking say it. You're in timeout, Nicholas. From AWA Studios. Can't wait to get my hands on this. And read it. This has been just another excellent series. God damn it, Nicholas.
You're a great coach. You know that? I just want everybody to know that I said that. That's on the record. Anyways, moving on.
I don't know if I can go to Chicago now. I gotta share a room with you.
Good luck. You're gonna get lost if you try and go without me. I'll tell you that. I know you will.
Jesus. No, I'll just I'll be in one place and one place only. You can find me at Loop Malnati's.
Right answer. Right fucking answer. All right. We got Boom. And I'm very excited to talk about Boom this week. We got Animal Pound issue 3, I Heart Skull Crusher issue 2, Lotus Land issue 6, Under Heist issue 3. Real quick with Lotus Land, I definitely fell off on that one. I'm going to go circle back, try and read all these six again because I had called dibs on this. I want to see where things stand and then move forward from there. But then we got two other issues, Joe. The Displaced issue 3. Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
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 Fantastic. Awesome stuff. Yeah. So damn good. We've talked about it a bunch through the first two issues. So don't want to beat a dead horse, but just each issue continues to get better. It is an awesome story. Definitely go check it out. If you haven't been on it, try and find the first two issues and pick up this third one this week. And then, Joe, we have Blow Away issue 1. This is by Zach Thompson and Nicola Izzo. I called dibs on this one. Stole this one on you right from underneath. Didn't go anything early, didn't cheat, nothing. Just got it on you somehow. And because we all know the first rule of TLDR is Boom, number one, you read it. That is a doc rule. And
but you stole this before you even got it. You were good. You were good.
When I saw that,
nagged it on the solicit.
When I saw the synopsis, man, I was like, this sounds really good. And honestly, there are plenty of times where you and I will rattle off the synopsis or we'll like read a story and like kind of know what's going on, but maybe we don't want to look at the synopsis because sometimes they tell you stuff that like you'll find out when you read it. Like, you know, sometimes we just tell you it's good and read it and we don't tell you the synopsis. There's a reason for that. You can get a fuller experience. But with this, I am so glad that I looked at the synopsis beforehand, because every time, every page that I'm reading, I'm like, okay, what's going on here? What's, like, I'm trying to find every single detail. Is there any little thing that's going to like lead to more information as we go along? It was great. And really the only thing that you need to know for the synopsis is we have this main character, Bryn Brudigan, who is a wildlife photographer, and she is in this like isolated, cold, like Arctic type island, and basically she's wondering, like, did she just witness a murder? And it's just like so freaking cool, and it's like that's what you need to know. And as much as like that seems like a big thing for the synopsis, like to like share with you, it's like there's like stuff that's also not being said. So of course, and I absolutely love this first issue, and I love Nicola Izzo's precise art style. Like that's on the lines, very fine, but also with the colors, because there's a lot of white in this, because it's like in this tundra type setting. And I was like, this whole time, it's just, I like, while I'm getting engrossed and trying to find every little detail and see what's going on, is there anything, like any breadcrumbs anywhere? I just felt like I was like immersed in this isolated tundra that the main character Bryn is in. So I had such a fun time reading this first issue, and it had nothing to do with the fact that I was happy that you couldn't read it. You're muted.
God damn it. So you're lucky that I went ahead and did the notes for the show before I did my this week's reading, because I went to solicit, and I was doing the, you know, copy and paste, you know, and then, and anyways, and so I was like, oh shit, this is the fucking book he called Dibs On, because I was geeked up to read it. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, because I didn't like read it, but we get the review copies. I just scrolled, and then there's been some buzz on Twitter.
Oh,
and I was like, ooh, yes. Yes. And then I was like, because I was going to text you, and I was like, don't, because you don't want, I don't want to give you a chance to call dibs. but you did already. So this is good though, because you can talk about it on the show. And unless we get the author on, the writer on, which would be awesome.
The mind games, the stupid mind games that we have to play with each other. It's amazing.
It's wild. But it's, you know, it's okay.
I love it. It definitely gets competitive at times. There's no question. Yeah. It's fun. Oh man. All right. What do we got from Dark Horse?
Okay. I'm gonna rip off some of these others, and then we'll get to Dark Horse. And then cool. We'll get to our books. So from Mad Cave, we have Love Me, A Romance Story, issue 1. Oh. From Vault, we have Beyond Real, issue 2. Don't take another fucking sip from that dumb fucking bottle again.
You are right. I like my drink. I don't even want to tell you.
Yeah, it's gross.
Wes doesn't complain when I do this. That's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Hmm. He probably thought you were drinking a beer. It looks like a fucking Red Stripe bottle. From Titan, we have Blade Runner. I didn't write down the number. Forgotten Runes, Wizard's Cult, issue 4. From Ablaze, we have Almost Dead, issue 2, The Agent, issue 5, and The Prism, issue 7. From Dynamite, this one's interesting. So we have James Bond 007, issue 4. It says Garth Ennis. I enjoyed issue 1 and 2, but I had a hard time getting through issue 3. Huh. We'll see. I don't know if this story is for me. Army of Darkness Forever, issue 7, Vampirella, issue 668. Evil Elvira meets H.P. Lovecraft, issue 3. Darkwing Duck, Justice Ducks, issue 2. Gargoyles Quest, issue 1. From Valiant, we have Bloodshot Unleashed, Reloaded, issue 2. And then why don't you take us through Dark Horse there, Nicholas?
Absolutely. So we got Helen of Windhorn, issue 2, which I have dibs on. That is the Tom King series. Blue Book 1947, issue 3. Quick Stops, volume 2, issue 1. John Carpenter's Toxic Commando, Rise of the Sludge God, issue 2. That is the title of the year. Star Wars, The High Republic, Saber for Hire, issue 1. And then we're just going all out on Scott Snyder, this issue, I guess. We have Dudley Datson in the Forever Machine, issue 1. This is by Scott Snyder with pencils by Jamal Igel and inks by Juan Castro. So this is another one of the Comixology original titles that Joe and I drafted few years ago now. I think that was 2021 that we did.
Yeah.
So, and this still isn't the last one that's going to be coming to Dark Horse via Comixology, but we get the first two chapters here. There, yeah, we still have the Book of Evil and what's the other one? The one that you know, Duck and Cover, the one that one right. with Albuquerque. Yeah. But anyways, this is the first two chapters of the five chapter story. This is pretty much par for the course what we've been getting. But this one's five chapters as opposed to most of the other ones being six. The first chapter introduces us to Dudley, and then you get hit with a twist, and it's like, oh, hold on. Like what? Like we're meeting this character the whole time, and then like you have some action that happens, and the stage is set. We get what this character is, and then just you get this curveball out of nowhere, and it's like, you know what it was like? It's like you're facing like Mariano Rivera, where he's throwing the cutter the whole time, and then he decides, you know what? I'm gonna throw you a curveball. He didn't throw a fucking curveball, but he just dropped one on you. Like that's kind of what happened there. I would not have seen that coming. Then in the second chapter, we learn more about the Forever Machine side of things. And again, there's a lot of stuff like that that's going on in that issue that like when you want, like when I obviously got to read this in totality, but I'm expecting to talk about this on the show based on those first two issues because they were awesome. I am going to have to figure out how the fuck to navigate talking about this with respect to spoilers, because there are just like that first issue, like the change. I don't know. I'll figure it out. But anyways, like I'm very excited for the third issue. And where you've talked before, I think it was what was the one with Tula Lotay again? The
Barnstormers.
The one about barnstorming. That's what I was about to fucking say. I know with that one, or maybe it was Clear. You said like you would have liked to have like for people to be able to experience like the first issue and then not read and then like wait a little bit on the second one as opposed to like the binging. Like,
well, right. Because did you not read this one digitally?
No.
Okay. So like when I read Barnstormers digitally, I got that experience. Right. And cause the first issue ends and you're like, oh, and the second, right. Oh, so you like when they put those sort of two issues, like back to back, you kind of lose that sort of first, oh shit moment, because it's just sort of blended in and you keep going. Which is odd because I oftentimes talk about like, well, it's not odd, but like there's some books where it's like, I need to read it all at once. Even if there are those sort of like, right from a pacing perspective, right? I need to read it all at once. Hellblazer Dead in America is an example of that. I need to sort of like, cause that's how I've always read. And I think that's how I best ingest that story. But with like Barnstormers, like you kind of lose that moment a little bit because it just sort of, you just go right into it, where it would have been like, bang, had you ended there. You went, oh, I think it would have just elevated it just a little bit more, which is saying something because that's such an excellent story.
It really was. It was such a good story. But yeah. It was, it would have been like quite the cliffhanger to end on that note, for the first issue. But at the same time, like, I'm very glad I was able to just roll into the next one because like, this is a massive development, is going to change everything. And it's also like something else that's like hidden in plain sight too. Actually, I should have noticed that too. Like the twist is you all will see what I mean when you pick it up, when you give it a read. But that is it from Dark Horse. And then we got, we didn't go through IDW yet, right?
No. You can do that now. And then I'll go into,
so we got the final issue of the current Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles run. And then we're going to be getting the Jason Aaron era. But this is issue 150, so then start of the new era. Then we got Star Trek issue 19, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, The Untold Destiny of the Foot Clan issue 2, Golgotha Motor Mountain issue 2, and then My Little Pony Kenbucky Roller Derby issue 3. And of course, we know, Joe, that if we're whatever book we're talking about last in What's New during a mainline episode, you are talking about a book from that publisher, although you've already mentioned what book you're talking about. What do you got for me?
So I have Dark Spaces Dungeon from IDW. This is written by Scott Snyder with art by Hayden Sherman, not Hayden Christensen. I always have to preface that because I make that mistake all the fucking time.
Bad that I think that every time now. Every time like Hayden Sherman is like, if I don't have it in front of me, it's like not Hayden Christensen.
Colors by Patricio Delpeci and letters by And World Design. Synopsis. when a family moves from a busy city to the relaxing woods of New Hampshire, they're hoping to find a quiet rural life. Instead, the family discovers a terrifying secret, a twisted and terrifying dungeon on their property with a threatening message, tell no one.
Okay. Shit.
Right? So I started reading, so Dark Spaces is Scott Snyder's sort of imprint, right, at IDW. And I first read Dark Spaces Wildfire, which was him and Hayden Sherman, which I need to talk about on the show at some point. And it was excellent. It was a different type of story, but it was excellent. There's still sort of a mystery, the thriller aspect to it. But that's when I first sort of, you know, was introduced to this Dark Spaces world. And then there's Dark Spaces Deeds, which I haven't read yet. I have all the issues. It's upstairs. I'm going to read that next. But that's not Scott Snyder and Hayden Sherman. It's a different team on that. And then I think there's another Dark Spaces series, which that one absolutely just kind of flew past my radar. But then like Dungeon, I see Snyder again and I see Sherman and I go, okay, I'm in. And you read this book. So it's five issues. I say this is very important, Nicholas. Because I'm going to chat about this in a moment, but it's five issues. Issues one and two dropped in October and December of 2023, with issues three through five dropping February, March, and April. So a majority of the issues in 2024. Oh. October is the cutoff, so it still fits. So this book is an absolute contender for Book of the Year, best new series. For the 2024 floppies, which are going to be, Nicholas, I think the most difficult floppies we've had yet in our storied career in podcasting.
I think that's a fair claim,
right? Because we've got this book, there's Little Black Book, there's The Eternals, there's Beneath the Trees Where Nobody Sees, The One Hand, The Six Fingers, right? Kill Your Darlings just misses the cut. We're going to find a way. I will find a way. Yeah, but
it might technically still make the cut. I mean, and then you also have The Displaced.
Right. So over the last several years, I can't think of a better run of reading comics than right now. Hmm. And I read this first issue. And again, right, it's all about pacing, right? And you don't need me to tell you that Scott Snyder is a brilliant writer, but the way he starts the book and sort of just layers on the suspense, and that the way that it ends, right? It's this guy, he's taking a walk in the woods and he sees what looks like a fucking sewer cap in the middle, and he opens it up with that note, tell no one, and then how everything sort of evolves or devolves, if you will, from that moment on. It's just, again, this is I don't say this to oversell it, and I don't say this is hyperbole or it is just, it is perfect storytelling, just the way that everything gets revealed and the order it gets revealed, the pacing of it, the delivery of it. It's so friggin' good, right? It's got Silence of the Lambs-esque vibes to it, in the sense where you've got an FBI agent that is, you know, and for this particular FBI agent, you know, a history with this particular MO and the cat and mouse games that happens, and the twisted nature. The more clues that get, you know, that unfold, and the more you learn about the main antagonist, it's twisted and it's screwed up. And I think this might be the darkest story that Scott Snyder has told, at least as far as what I've read. There might be something out there that I'm missing that might be like, whew, more, but this
that's
is
what
this
he
is
was heavy. Saying. That's what he was saying. Like when it was coming out, before it came out, he's like, this might be like the darkest story that I've written.
Yeah. It's dark. It's twisted. It's enthralling. It keeps your suspense level up, and it might be one of the best endings to a comic book I've read.
Ooh.
Right. One of the best endings, you know, just it was just done so well. right? And we talked about how well the ending was for Kill Your Darlings, right? This is, it was just so perfectly executed, Nicholas. Like, I know we talk about, like, when it comes to horror books and we talk about witches and how good that is and where we put it on our pantheon of, you know, top 10 horror classics. I think this is better.
Wow. Okay.
I'll have to go back and reread Witches again, you know, because it's easy to have recency bias with these things.
Sure.
But in terms of the way that, you know, Snyder executed the story, the way Sherman delivers, I think this is some of Hayden's best art as well. And I think he has a natural talent for suspense and horror, right? Like, we've seen him on Thumbs, which isn't really a horror book, right? And it fits the story that Sean is telling on that. But for this, like, he does suspense really well, right? Right, we see certain artists, whether it's Delabar, Talij, whether it's not vicious like Cormac, Alex Cormac. I was about to call him Cormac McCarthy. No, Alex Cormac. Like, just certain artists just have, like, when it comes to horror, like, they nail the tone, right? And Hayden does that, very well. And like, this is a tight 5-issue story. It's perfect. Bang, 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 bang. Right? Mm-hmm. You get it, you ingest it, you devour it, and you're, fuck, that was a satisfying ending. Right? And Damn. It just, like I said, I think to me, it's an almost perfect ending, to a story. I'm not going to go into characters too much because I don't want to give anything away. I don't want to spoil anything. But, like, the main the main protagonist, Detective Madoc, Bodhi, right? He was kidnapped as a child. He spent 3 years in this dungeon before escaping, and then he became an FBI agent. And so that's what's twisted about this, right? Because he's now a full-grown, you know, adult and has been in the FBI for some time. And when he stumbles across this case, I mean, this is a book that's about this. I wouldn't even call him a serial killer, right? Because he's not killing his victims. He's just torturing them very painfully and very slowly for years and decades, right? And that is messed up. Yeah. And the way that he works is that he's got different torture dungeons. You don't know how many. And they can be scattered across the entire United States. And each person is treated differently. He gives them nicknames. He knows everything about them. And he has favorites. And, you know, Detective Modoc, the one that got away, right? There's this twisted love story, right? That comes with that. And so just this cat and mouse game that happens, like the fact that you got this guy who is now kidnapped, right? The story starts, with the kidnapping. It starts with this regular, you know, family man, not regular, but, you know, like, super successful family man discovering this thing, and there's someone on the inside. Someone's still in there. And then the kidnapping happens, and then, like, just the way it all sort of reveals itself, and it's just so good. It just gave me that, like, Clarice Starling sort of hunting down Buffalo Bill kind of feel to it.
I got chills in the middle of your explanation of that. This sounds terrifying. It is
crazy. But that's the wild thing about it. Like, it's like when you talk about horror, right? Like, there's obviously different, I think, shades of horror, right? There's different sort of categories of horror. Yeah. It's not your typical slasher kind of horror or your monster horror or anything like that, right? This is, like, I put that in this category of horror where it's very suspenseful. It's a thriller, mm-hmm. right? Where you get moments of just, like, oh, right. But it's not the kind of book that if I read at night, it's going to, you know, like, if I'm reading Hotel or Ice Cream Man or something like that, or Sink, I'm like, oh, I got to put it down for a little bit. But you read each issue and you're still thinking about it.
Mm,
right. Yeah. You finish the story. You're thinking about it. I want to go back and reread it because I want to see if there were, you know, what the breadcrumbs were that I missed, sort of thing. So I can't recommend this book enough. I'm going to, you know, This is a book where I'm going to say, you know, Rich Keefe, go read it now.
Yeah,
get the trade, read it now. It's in your wheel. If this is, you know, it's that good. You tell anyone and everyone about it.
Yeah, I honestly, I'm like, as you were going through that at the end there, I was like, I know Keith will be listening, but like, we got to make sure that he gets on this when the trade comes out, which I don't know if we
want to say August is when Comixology.
Yeah, the end of August,
maybe.
The end of August. So if maybe try and wrangle up the single issues now if you haven't done
I've got that. A couple of them, but you know, like I think I've got like. I had to buy one digitally because I just comic shop didn't have it. But
this sounds, I mean, like when you say that this may be like, this is some of Scott's best work, like that's a pretty big ass statement that you're making. And it really, like, you backed it up based like it's, you have sold me. I was already sold, but on that point of this being some of Scott's best work, you very much like sold me on that.
Yeah, excellent. Absolutely excellent. I was just blown away, baby.
All right, I'm going to try and lighten things up. Actually, I say that. I can't really say I'm going to lighten things up. So I'm talking about Rogue and Gambit this week. And the inspiration for me talking about Rogue and Gambit this week is the reason why I can't say that I'm lightening things up. Spoilers for anybody who has not watched the fifth episode of X-Men 97. But my favorite comic book character, the reason that I got into superhero genre period is Gambit. He is my number one guy.
Didn't even take him in your, you changed my mind draft.
I took him this time
or
around.
Did you take him or did I take him? Oh, that
I took,
Rogue.
I took Rogue. Gambit this time around. Yeah. I didn't take him in the Mac and Goo one. We did. Yeah. Nice try though. So anyways, you're just ready to go tonight. You are like you are a dog with a bone.
You can't booch and drinking.
The reason that I wanted to talk about this now was because obviously Gambit in the fifth episode, as far as we can tell, he's dead. Like he died but the character, like, as like this happens all the time, superhero comics. Like, yeah, I'm like sad, but at the same time, like he could come back at any given time. Like, there's you and I talked about it, and you're like, yeah, it could happen this way. And I was like, oh yeah, and that's just one example of how it could happen. But at the same time, I was like, you know, you can't ask for a better death for a character, man. Like, he went down in a fucking blaze, and it's not just like it was a badass ending. It's like, this is a guy who is, I love him. He's very cool. His personality. I love his powers. Like, as a baseball player growing up, I was always like, God, if I had Gambit's powers, how fucking convenient would that be? And then,
hit the strike zone first though, Nicholas.
But if you put him up against Rogue, right? Like, which is how it's been for pretty much ever. You know, it's like, what are his power sets? You know, you look at the rest of the team, it's like Gambit's very much lower down the list. But when Magneto couldn't get, like, take down this Mastermind. Whoa, what is that?
Just happened.
That is,
I've seen the thumbs up in the past, but I've never seen the fireworks.
I don't know what I did, but
maybe it's an analogy between the fireworks between Gambit and Rogue.
Maybe, yeah,
maybe exactly. Between Rogue and Magneto, which I did not much care for.
Or maybe it's I'm finally getting those Gambit powers. It's a little
bit. Those are more like Jubilee powers, buddy.
but like, so where Magneto couldn't stop Master Mold, and then you have Rogue who, like, Gambit, she tried to, but Gambit saved her. He steps up in the end, and where you think he's done, he finds a way to get the job done. And it was just like, I couldn't ask for a better, like, death of a superhero character that I love. Like, it was perfect. So I wanted to talk more about them in this week's mainline issue. So we got this series, which is written by Stephanie Phillips, art by Carlos Gomez, colors by David Curiel, and letters by Ariana Meyer. And this was a 5-issue series. The trade came out in January. This is not to be confused with Kelly Thompson's run with Perry Perez. That was in 2018. I did enjoy that 5-issue story a lot, but I wanted to talk about this one because it's most recent. And also, if you like this, and then you're like, I want to read the Kelly Thompson run, there's that Rogue and Gambit run, and then there's also a 12-issue Mr. and Mrs. X run, which is, again, Kelly Thompson and I believe it's Jazz Bazaldúa. So there's a, that we're getting more and more Rogue and Gambit content. And like, honestly, like, I need more stories with these two. I can't get enough of them. And I'm really glad that we've had two writers, lesser writers who have taken a crack at it, have really done a good job fleshing out the relationship, spending time with them, where we talk all the time about character-driven stories and how we love those. This is like, it's relationship driven story. Like that is what's at the center of it all. And that's what I want when I'm spending time with Rogue and Gambit. I want it to be about them more than anything else. Like everything else around them can just push the relationship in directions. I don't need like the plot. Okay. It like, that's not as big a deal. And for this, obviously this is taking place when Krakoa is still very much a thing. Obviously we're moving out of the Krakoa phase, but you can read this again, just know Krakoa. There is one other like person I'm going to flesh out a little bit here for anybody who wants to go check this out and hasn't read all the other stuff, but still wants to read some more Gambit or some more Rogue stories. The synopsis: Krakoa is on a precipice. Destiny can see what's coming, but the precog can't act. For that, she'll need her adoptive daughter, Rogue. Husbands need not apply, but Gambit is determined to make the most of the mission anyways, and put some Cajun spice back into their increasingly complicated marriage. So Destiny mentioned there. So for those who don't know, she has been like, she's a very much at the center of everything in Krakoa. Again, she's a precog. So, but she's like she's the one person that everybody is constantly worried about. That has been very much a thing since, is it Powers of 10 and House of X, right? That's what the original. Yep. Yeah. Okay. So, and she's also Mystique's wife. So that is how like the whole adoptive daughter with Rogue, like that's how that all comes into play, because we all know very well Rogue and in Mystique's history in the comics. But so we have these two, and then there are other players involved, but honestly, like you don't need to, like, they're just like parts of the story. Like they're not like everything is about Rogue and Gambit, what's going on with these two. When it comes to the art, I love Gomez's style for these characters. Again, like I care primarily about is Rogue and Gambit, and it's very similar to, like, you know, you have the whole, you have the Marvel style, and I think there is an X-Men style, and there is that here, but specifically for Gambit, there's like this edge and flair, like the right combination that Gomez brings to the table, that I'm just like, yep. Like, and you'll see Gambit's on like the very first page that you see when you open this book up, and I was like, boom, perfect. Very happy with this. Like, I know that I'm going to have a good time on the artistic front. And by the way, this is also available on Hoopla for those wondering, want to get this real quick and get going on it. But what really like puts this, from an artistic standpoint, like elevates this story for me, is how Gomez and Curiel came together to illustrate Gambit's powers. Yes, I know I'm going heavy on the Gambit. There is like, Rogue is great in this, but like Gambit's my guy, like 100%. And Rogue, that also means Rogue's my girl. But like, I felt like this series was like an extra elevation of him, in the large part because of the art. This may be my favorite way I've seen his powers illustrated. And it's not just about how it's drawn, but it's also how it was like utilized. Like, it's not like we're constantly seeing Gambit like throw a million cards. We're not seeing a constant flourish and everything like that. But I do feel like there are so many times throughout this story where he's like seconds from like unleashing on people, which is like, he's always got like a hands, like quick, he's very quick to charge his hands, but he's not always quick to use them in full, I guess is the easiest way, the best way to put it. But yeah, I and then the other thing too, like we get to issue 4, and I say where he's like, you know, he's waiting and waiting and waiting. Issue 4 is where we get like this major unleash. There's a full page of Gambit, and it's just like, this should be a poster. Like that's like, this is a great image of this character. This is exactly what I think of with him. I just, so well executed. And like, there's a pop, I think is the best way to put it. And again, like, this isn't just like what Gomez is doing. This is a lot of also what Curiel is bringing to the table, where it's like, I feel like when I think of Gambit all the time, it's like he's throwing 3 or 5 cards at once. Like every time he uses his powers, it's like all of them at once. But in this instance, we'll see like him holding one card, or his hands charged up, something like that. Or maybe he gets to use his bow staff. There's like a pop there. And it, like, that is like, so if this makes sense, it, as opposed to it feeling like a rush, or maybe a flush is a better way to put it, versus a pop. That is like the difference that I had with his powers throughout this series. And I really enjoyed that experience. And then when it comes to the writing, like if you want to hang out with Rogue and Gambit, that is what you're going to get with this series. There are some things that are relevant to Krakoa that are going on. But quite honestly, if you just listen to what I'm saying when it comes to Destiny, and you get that little like data page at the beginning when they show you the characters and they give you a summary. But if you just know who Destiny is and understand that like Rogue's got a lot going on and like get, like, you know what? Actually, there's a level of like role reversal that we have with these two characters where Gambit's always the one, right, who's the secretive. He's the, you know, the swamp rat and everything like that. And he's always keeping his secrets. Like that's not a question. Like that's always a thing with him. In this case, it feels more like it's emotions that he's kind of keeping buried down, but Rogue's the one that's actually the secret keeper throughout all of this. So get to see them have a role reversal, how he responds to that, how he handles that throughout the story. I kind of already tipped my hand a little bit at that, but about how he responds to it. But that is that's probably the only other thing. But you kind of like as the story goes along, you very much get an understanding of that dynamic at play. Really all you need to know going in is just what I said about Destiny. Otherwise, just a fun time hanging out with Rogue and Gambit and a lot of fun action and like both characters, very well written by Stephanie Phillips. And I think I've said it on here a lot that I get, like, there aren't many characters where I'm like, you don't, like I felt like the writer didn't know, like didn't have the core of the character right. Like when we're talking about Big Two, obviously, and it's not easy to necessarily do that. But there aren't many times where I'm like, this ain't it. The Gambit is somebody who I will be like that about, and I think that like Stephanie Phillips and Kelly Thompson for that matter too, and Stephen Fox. And I know he didn't do quite as much with Gambit because it was a team book, but like three people who got it. Like they know how to write Gambit. Like I was excited to see Stephanie Phillips on it. And if she got the opportunity to do more Gambit and Rogue, I'd 100% read, or even just a solo Gambit title would be great.
Yeah. Yeah. Gambit is one of those characters, much like we talk about Red Hood, you just need the right writer, right? Because just those characters should be more elevated than what they are.
Yeah,
I can't read this. I love Stephanie Phillips. I think she's a tremendous writer, and I still have to go back and read the Kelly Thompson one as well. But I'm with you. I've always loved Gambit, but his powers—they're not the strongest, but they just look so badass. Mm-hmm. Right? Give me Ryan Parrott on Gambit,
dude.
Right? Give me a Ryan Parrott and Danielle DiNicolo combo.
Ooh.
Right. And I would, you know, oh man, I think that would be absolutely tremendous.
You have Ryan Parrott cornering the market on all Louisiana stories, don't you?
Yes, that's right. But like he's just such a cool badass character, and I've always loved him, and I think a lot of people love him. He's like, it's one of those cult comic heroes, right? Same thing with Red Hood. You get the right writer that understands the character, and the possibilities are endless. Yep. Now, I'll tell you what I'm not going to miss with the end of the Krakoa era is hopefully those fucking data pages.
I know.
Adios, muchacho. Get the fuck out of here. That was part of the reason why I stopped reading the initial Hickman books, because they just got too dense.
That'd be my bad. Anymore, you right? Hated those.
I stopped reading X-Men. I think it was like X-Men 15 because of it. I couldn't do it anymore. And then I was like, all right, boom. And I got back in, and they've been used, but sparingly.
Mm-hmm.
And the way they should have been used. I've got 2-3 pages of fucking data pages. I'm out. Mm-hmm. Right. But anyways, I love it. I can't wait to read it. That last episode of X-Men was tremendous, by the way.
I'll tell you what, I do want to hear your thoughts on that, but the data pages in here, there's at least three. The data pages are text exchanges, and it's one with, I don't have a problem sharing this, one's with Rogue and Gambit, one is with Mystique and Destiny, and one is with, there's four. One is with Storm and Gambit, and one is with Rogue, and Rocket Raccoon.
Well, see, but that's different. That's acceptable. And that's okay. Because it's not.
I know it is exciting.
Chunky ass texts, right? The data page is paragraphs of nothing but just white paper, black ink letters, and paragraphs. I'm not going to fucking sit through that. Yeah. I love prose. I'll read prose. I'm not reading comic books for dense dialogue or dense, you know, paragraphs.
You're going to have fun with this one. You're going to enjoy
the text exchanges. That's fun.
Yeah.
You're going to have fun with that, right?
When I saw Rocket, I'm like, wait, what? Okay. let's do it. I'm getting Rocket Ink. Now let's do a Rocket Rogue and Gambit story. That's what I want. That's what I need. You said you brought up X-Men 97 episode 5. I mean, the show's been killing it.
Yeah, it was excellent. The stuff leading up to that, there were some moments where I was like, the stuff with Cyclops, I just did not fit, did not work, did not land. That is so far out of his character's zone and wheelhouse and what he's been for 30-something years. I didn't much care for that. I didn't much care for the locking of lips between Magneto and Rogue. That kind of creeped me out, I'm going to be honest with you. I guess the other thing, too, is I don't love the artistic choices for Magneto. There's something about his look I just don't love. Hmm. And it's not his outfit. It's mostly just his face and his hair. I know he's, you know, in the comics, he's had the long hair before, but just the way, I don't know. They missed it, I think, just a bit. With every other character, they know it's great. There's just something about his character design I don't love. But
face.
Yeah, right. But the way Gambit went out, I thought that was such a badass. That whole sequence, pretty much from when Master Mold came and from the moment, new episodes coming out by the time you listen to this, the way Cable made his entrance was from that point on, that episode was absolute fucking dynamite.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. I was like, wait a minute. Are they just going to show Cable and then like kind of just leave it alone and not address it? Like are they just? Because I was thinking like it's just showing up and passing. Because like with the old one, things like that could happen. Because it was such a different era in media and in so many different ways. You could do that and it would be fine. Because Cable, while he was a character who they did flesh out on that show in some capacity, you could have gotten away with some things. When they did it here, it's like, no, like, pause, like, you're not just getting away with this. Yes, that you're right. It was very well done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Awesome stuff, Nicholas. Awesome stuff.
All right. Well, that is going to do it for this week. As I mentioned, we're actually going to be dropping the upcoming Friarside Chat with Akira Brown on Coiled to Strike at the same time as our What's New. It's going to be one episode together. We're going to piggyback the two, so you'll be able to listen to those all in one fell swoop, as opposed to what we've done in the past where we usually do them separately. But anyways, just wanted to put that on your radar. Again, go subscribe to our audio channels if you want to be able to catch that conversation. But until next week, Joe, which, by the way, next week we got an episode, and then we're also getting on a plane going to C2E2, too. Can't forget that. Very excited.
There's been new developments, Nicholas, that may, you know, that may stall those plans now. Kombucha.
Until next week, stay sexy.
I am. You're not. You're drinking kombucha.
Nick's just like, I'm out. All right, we're done.